Mr. Clinch, good morning to you. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Mr. Clinch, then you may approach and you may proceed.
I'm actually Mr. Philbin, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, and that's exactly the way you signed it. And once you took your mask off, you are Mr. Philbin. So good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Are we ready?
Yes.
Good morning. May it please the honorable justices of this court, opposing counsel. I'm Stephen Philbin. I'm counsel for the defendant, John Drake. I'd first like to address the suppression motion that was filed by the appellants in this case. The record in this case makes it clear that the appellant was unlawfully detained, and it resulted in an unlawful search and seizure in violation of Mr. Drake's Fourth Amendment rights. To start with, you know, this started with a deputy that was looking for a speeder that he'd encountered earlier and came across Mr. Drake, and it was a cold, snowy night on a country road. It was dark out, and the deputy claimed that, you know, he had some suspicions because he was driving slow. So that was odd. Quite frankly, it doesn't seem very odd that you would be driving slowly on a snowy night in January on a country road. So any kind of probable cause or reasonable suspicion for that is not very well founded. He did drive in to a driveway and turn around. Apparently he was lost. That really, people get lost. That's not really reasonable suspicion either.
Counselor, you said there was an unlawful detention. When did that unlawful detention begin in your estimation?
Well, Your Honor, you know, he did stop his vehicle because he noticed law enforcement was following him. And so the officer came up and questioned him some. And
to be clear, when he stopped his vehicle, he wasn't being pulled over by law enforcement. The lights and sirens weren't on.
That's correct. So it's kind of the detention I'm talking about is really after, you know, he was asked if it was okay for a drug dog to come. And
why isn't that consent?
Well, Your Honor, the state has two parts of their argument. They say that, well, he initially consented. That's true. He did say he'd wait for the drug dog, but then there's unrefuted testimony that, you know, it and evidence, and it was even stipulated to that he waited 39 minutes.
And, did he withdraw that consent?
And that's another flawed argument, too, Your Honor, that he didn't withdraw the consent because.
What we said, can you withdraw consent once given?
I think the issue there is the defendant or the appellant testified that he asked the deputy as he was waiting, am I free to leave? And the officer refused to answer his question. And so if you put yourselves in the shoes of a ordinary citizen, they've been stopped or not stopped, but the encounter with law enforcement, they're told the drug dogs are coming and they ask law enforcement, am I free to leave? And law enforcement refuses to answer the question. I don't think a reasonable person would really think that they're free to leave. And
at that point, that's when detention occurred.
Yes, that's what I would say. I think that the 39 minutes is excessive. I mean, I look at it this way. If somebody were to agree to jump in a pot of lukewarm water and they consented to that, and then the temperature gets turned up and they're left in there for 39 minutes, did they consent to 39 minutes?
So
no, I don't.
The
think...
limiting principle that you're advocating for us, is it 39 minutes is too long, you say, even with consent? Is 20 minutes too long? If he waited 31 minutes, is it too long?
I guess that's an issue for the court to determine, but I would ask yourselves, what kind of precedent does
it? Cases out there with where courts have said, maybe even this court has said, that in longer period of time than 39 minutes is not too long.
Mr. Clench initially researched this, and I believe he didn't find any cases that effect. If there are cases that effect, I think it should be reconsidered.
Does the record?
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. Is the question you're getting to, rather than the length of time for waiting for the dog, is the other question or the same question? If a citizen says, "Am I free to leave?" and the officer gives no answer, what is the legal significance of that situation? Not just here, but in other cases.
I think that with the authority that an officer possesses, and they're there, he's activated his emergency lights, he's took him back to his patrol car, he's questioned him, he knows the drug dogs are coming. I just don't think the officer, I think if he was free to leave, should have told him, "Yes, you're free to leave." So I'd consider that a request.
Was there testimony from the officer about that issue?
And looking through the record, I did not see that he addressed that issue. So I think it's unrefuted that, he did make that.
So I beg your pardon. Is the legal analysis that you're proposing, if a citizen says, "I'm free to leave," the officer says nothing, then a reasonable person would or would not believe they were detained?
I would agree with that. Yes, I don't think a reasonable person would think they were free to leave. They're under the authority of an officer. They ask if they can leave. He's got a badge on, uniform. He's out there in the country. He's been questioned extensively. He asks if he can leave, and the officer refuses to answer him. I think that's very troubling.
Well, he knew how not to give consent, though, isn't that?
What's that?
He knew how not to give consent. Didn't the officer ask him to search the vehicle, and he said no?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but I'm just saying. Yeah,
he said no.
He did deny, but then he was asking, "Can I leave?" The officer didn't answer. I just think it sets a really bad precedent to for a citizen. And I think that, the officer really didn't have much more than a hunch in this case to hold this appellant for 39 minutes. Do we want that any citizen to be stopped?
Well, our analysis would be different if he hadn't consented, right? If we had a case where the officer said, "I need you to wait here for just a minute, I've got a call to make," and then 39 minutes later the dog drug arrives, we'd have a whole different analysis. But we've got a situation where the defendant was asked, "Will you stay till I get a dog here?" And he said yes.
I think that the real question is, what was the extent of the consent? Because when he made that consent, he didn't say, "I'll wait for 39 minutes." And then when he requested if he could leave, I think you make a strong argument that basically is no longer consent, but basically he's feeling compelled to stay because the officer refused to answer the question.
So does it, I beg your pardon then, I beg your pardon, is this, does it necessarily follow that if a citizen has given consent, right, that he or she is knowledgeable enough, not with prompting, to thereafter at some point say, "I declare my consent is withdrawn"? Look in the camera and say so, and off you go. Is that the obligation of the citizen?
I don't think I would put that obligation on a defendant where he affirmatively asked if he was free to go and the officer refused to answer the question. I see that I have a minute and a half left. I would like to address the other issues that the state evidence did not.
Did you hear the question I attempted to ask twice?
Oh,
about the, yes, whether the record showed how far away the drug dog was.
I believe the officer was somewhere in York, and
perhaps.
I believe he was, I'm not sure if he was on duty or not at the time and had to get up and go. He would have had to drive within the limits of York County, which, you know, it's snowy, but, you know, I would think you could get from the center of the county to there in 15 minutes. But granted, my recollection is I thought the officer was maybe not on duty and they had to get him up. So it would have taken a long time, but that's really not Mr. Drake's responsibility. I mean, as far as like the length of time, but I would just submit to, I guess on the brief on the habitual criminal, but, and then also there's the ineffective assistance of counsel. It's very troubling that trial counsel just stipulated the facts rather than try. I can see no strategic advantage of that other than.
Wasn't he trying to preserve the motion to suppress?
What's that?
Wasn't he just trying to preserve the motion to suppress?
I think he still could have filed that as preserved that as well, but see, I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is Mr. Drake's direct appeal of his conviction of possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine. Subject to a habitual criminal enhancement, Mr. Davis assigns that the district court incorrectly overruled his motion to suppress, that the enhancement finding was made in error, and that he received ineffective assistance of counsel for a variety of reasons. I'll jump into the suppression motion first. The testimony in this case established that there was no initial seizure in the case. This is a tier one encounter between Mr. Drake and the officer until the canine unit arrived and indicated positively on Drake's vehicle's driver's side door.
What's the record show regarding Mr. Drake's request to whether he was free to leave or not?
I believe that the question was posed to the officer as to whether or not consent was ever withdrawn. I think he says that there was never any conversation at that point. They just sort of sat and chatted and continued to talk about, you know, where he was going and some of the stuff that, you know, what he was doing out there.
So are there credibility issues here that the judge took a side on?
Yeah, I believe so. And it didn't, you know, from the record, it would seem that he sided with the testimony of the officers that testified in the case.
Oh, I beg your pardon. With respect to the withdrawal of consent, what is the testimony by both the by Mr. Drake and the officer?
Mr. Drake indicated that he asked at some point after giving consent to the drug dog search if he could leave. He did not say, "I am actually withdrawing consent to the drug dog search." He claims that he said something along the lines of, "Can I go?" And he says that the officer does not speak to the issue, but just continues deflecting and talking about other things.
So, which one did the judge believe?
The district court ultimately overruled the motion to suppress. So it would appear that there was no finding by the district court of, "I find this officer credible and I find Mr. Drake incredible." But the overruling of Mr. Drake's suppression motion would seem to suggest that he found the testimony of the officers.
What was the officer's testimony?
The initial seizing or the initial stopping officer?
What was the officer's testimony about the question about, "Am I free to go?"
I believe that he, if I'm remembering the record correctly, he says that, you know, there was never any point where Mr. Drake withdrew consent for the drug dog search. And I'm not sure if it was raised whether or not he asked if he was free to go. If it was raised, I would imagine that the officer says that, you know, the question wasn't actually posed to him. But I can't recall in the record if that question is actually asked, if Mr. Drake asked if he was free to go, because, you know, ultimately, I guess the stance is that that conversation didn't occur. The
so,
question.
Help us out. What is the state's position on how the law is or should be in terms of a situation where a citizen has given consent, time passes, and then the citizen wishes to withdraw? Are there magic words that citizen is required to articulate? How do we resolve what has been framed as a withdrawal of consent? How do we evaluate that as a legal matter, not a credibility matter?
I think that the case law dictates that, you know, consent can be withdrawn, but there needs to be sort of an unambiguous, you know, "Actually, I don't want to wait for the drug dog. Actually, you know, can I go?" It can't be like, "I'm, you know, something that can be misinterpreted or reinterpreted in some other way. As far as just the passage of time, there's several legal standards. I think one of the more recent ones is in Schiffer-Miller about whether or not waiting a period of time creates a situation where consent is automatically withdrawn. And in that case, this court decided that it looked at all the circumstances and looked and saw, you know, whether or not that period of time was rational or not to determine whether or not, you know, a seizure occurs over, you know, the passage of time, if there is no specific withdrawal of consent. The facts in this case show that the officer followed Mr. Drake on the road for a time and never noticed several suspicious behaviors. The officer did not pull Mr. Drake over. Drake himself stopped in the middle of the road in a lane of travel, and the officer got out of his police vehicle and approached. The officer asked Mr. Drake some questions to determine what he was doing, which netted several suspicious answers. The officer returned to his vehicle, ran Mr. Drake's license. His record indicated some drug history, some prior drug history. It was also at this point that the officer decided to put the overhead lights on his police cruiser, given the safety issue of where the vehicles were located, the conditions. It was the middle of the night, rural road out in the county. Now, the officer returned to Mr. Drake and specifically asked him if he had anything in the car, including drugs, which drew a break in eye contact, which is the testimony of the officer, between Mr. Drake and the officer, and then more suspicious responses to questions about his activities, where he's going, what he's doing, what he was doing in the driveway residence that the officer saw him pull into and sit and wait for a while.
What's the relevance of all these facts since we're dealing with consent?
I think the state in its brief argues in the alternative that even if there is some sort of seizure that takes place, that there is a buildup over time. So if the encounter goes from a tier one encounter to something more like a tier two encounter at some point, say when the officer asks, you know, can you come back into the car? Or if there is some withdrawal of consent, either through, you know, the words of Mr. Drake or, you know, the passage of time or something along those lines, there is places where you can withdraw, and the characterization of the encounter changes into a tier two encounter and then into a larger tier three encounter. So it's simply the state's position, just trying to argue in the alternative and establish exactly why either way you slice it, that this case is the actions by the police officer were allowed by law.
Or the fact that the appellant here refused or did not provide his consent to a couple of the prior inquiries by the officer, does that play any part of our analysis?
Well, I think it shows that Mr. Drake knows how to withdraw consent or knows how to deny, you know, somebody asking to search his vehicle. I think that it shows that he's not intimidated by the officer to a point, not intimidated by the officer's presence, and consent is denied to search his vehicle when he's already out of his car. He's in the front seat of the police cruiser. And that is also a statement that the police officer says, yes, I asked him if I could search his car on a couple of different occasions, and he denied consent. But there is no real affirmative or no definitive supply of an answer by the officer saying that, yes, he actually said, you know, am I free to go? So I think that it contributes to the credibility analysis, one, but it also looks at the totality of the circumstances about whether Mr. Drake, I think part of his argument is, you know, I feel intimidated. You know, there's a police officer following me. He's asking me questions. I do not feel like I'm free to leave the situation.
What's our standard? Do we use a reasonable person standard, or do we use this specific person? The fact that this individual had experience in the criminal justice system previously, does that have any part to play in our analysis?
I believe that the standard review looks at the facts specific to the situation and the overall reasonable person standard about whether or not they would be free to leave. I'm not sure whether or not Mr. Drake's prior criminal justice involvement really, that isn't discussed in the hearing.
Do we look at a reasonable person with a prior history of involvement with the criminal justice system?
Perhaps, but I don't think that would play well in this scenario because those facts aren't borne out during the suppression hearing. It is not really, it's just that he has a prior drug history. It doesn't talk about how long ago it's been. It doesn't say whether or not he was arrested. It doesn't talk about the circumstances under which he was arrested or cited.
Do we look at a reasonable person who has refuse consent for a personal search or a car search?
Yes, yeah, I think that the familiarity that somebody might have, such as in a decline of Miranda or something like that, I think that the law lays out that, you know, somebody that is familiar with some of the processes that they're being involved in can help inform whether or not they are knowledgeable enough or savvy enough to understand the consent that's being given and the ramifications that come afterwards. I just
I beg your pardon. It's not a reasonable person like a person on the street. It's a reasonable person who has either familiarity with the criminal justice system or within this encounter has demonstrated a particular acumen in giving and withdrawing consent.
Potentially, yes. But again, I would just fall back that the facts don't really bear out that his familiarity isn't teased out beyond just the fact that he has a prior criminal history when the officer stops him. Overall, the state maintains its position that this was a completely consensual encounter up until the drug dog hit on the driver's side of Mr. Drake's car. On the other issues, unless there are specific questions by this court, the state would just submit on its briefs.
Did we dispose of any of the incompetency of counsel issues?
I think that several of the ineffective assistance of counsel claims could be disposed of. The alleged failure to schedule a timely hearing for Drake's motion to suppress it. The motion was ultimately filed. The hearing was ultimately held. It was denied. I just don't think that there is any, there's no prejudice there because his argument is, you know, my counsel didn't file it on time. Therefore, I might be paraphrasing the argument. I might be doing it poorly, but it looked bad. But the hearing was ultimately held. The suppression motion was eventually heard. There's also alleged failure to request discovery information prior to trial. This is for a dash cam footage. And I think during the suppression hearing, the officer is asked, was there dash cam footage? Was the dash cam equipment in the car? The officer says, yes, there is. And there's a little bit of a dust up about, well, I didn't get discovery. I didn't get that video. I didn't get any of those things. And the officer says, well, you know, actually the dash cam, I mean, malfunction in the car, and so we actually don't have the footage. The stuff existed, but there was a malfunction, so we don't have it. So I don't think that there's, you can't be faulted for not seeking out discovery that didn't exist. As well as there's the agreeing to a stipulated bench trial. There's a colloquy between the court and Mr. Drake. Mr. Drake says, yes, I understand what I'm doing by waiving bench trial. It's established that he understands what's going on. Those would be at least those issues I think could be done away with pretty easily. There's nothing else. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? You have no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments on State versus Drake. Thank you very much. You are excused. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of AA et al.